I really like my new intro song. Hi, everybody. I'm Beauty Cone Fredos, and welcome, welcome, welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beauty Show. And for those of you who may be tuning in for the first time and you wonder who is Beauty Cone Fredos and what is the Ask Beauty Show, I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist. Yes, one of those. I am also the author of the book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this is a book for all of us, for anybody who's really interested in never making a mistake in love again. I actually did research with 450 people in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut area, and I came up with a formula. And for people who know me, they know that I am very bottom line. If it doesn't work, let's not waste our time talking about it. But this formula is actually, it's a jewel. And I wish that I had had this formula when I began my own relationship life many, many, many years ago. Because what this formula does is that it teaches us exactly how to assess. Yes, assess. It's not sexy. It's not romantic. But how to assess who is right for us and who is wrong for us before committing to any serious relationship. And it really does. It changes the way that we look at relationships forever. And over and above that, it educates. It empowers us and it keeps us safe, because when you look at what is actually going on in the world of relationships, well, we're really not doing all that well. For example, if we're looking at divorce, the divorce statistic for first marriages is 48%. And for second marriages, that number actually jumps to 67%. And one would really hope, right, that after marrying the first time and the second time, the third time, that we are going to get it right. However, statistically, that is actually not the case, because the divorce rate for third marriages is 74%. And you know, it's interesting. I remember hosting my first call-in counseling radio talk show on WPRO in Providence, Rhode Island. And I had a man call me and he said, "Beauty," he said, "I have been married three times. I married a blonde, I married a brunette, and I married a redhead." But when I spoke to this man, it was really, really clear that the only thing he actually changed was the color of the women's hair, because the dynamics in all three relationships were basically the same. So there is a learning curve for all of us if we're really hoping to find and maintain a successful relationship with anyone. But actually, the assessment process is the third thing that we need to look at. The first and the most important thing, if we're ever hoping to find and maintain and sustain a healthy and loving relationship, number one is that each of us needs to be in a good place ourselves, emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically, and we have to be willing, and I know it's not fun, but we need to be willing to look at our own issues, mostly stemming from our own family of origin. We have to be prepared to deal with what did and did not happen in our early lives. We have to be willing. We really have to be serious and willing to deal with the abuse, the substance abuse, the sexual abuse, the verbal abuse, the physical abuse. Because the fact is, my friends, is that unless we do this, we are never, ever quite able to really live in the moment, which means that we typically then have one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And even though we can't change our history, I have found, and I've been practicing psychotherapy and sex therapy, and I can hardly believe it now, for over 35 years, that there really is an effective way to help people to emotionally work through what did and didn't happen, which enables people then to be able to live mostly, nothing is ever 100%, in the present. And it does not mean that you are going to forget what happens. And in many, many cases, it also does not mean that you need to forgive, although there are people who would debate that with me. So again, we need to be in a really, really good place. We need to learn and use my formula. The book is For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And number three, what I have found, despite all of the relationship coaches and therapists and self-help books and shows on relationships, that the majority of people, we have not learned the ingredients that really go into a long-term relationship. And when you think about it, where would we learn about all of this if we were not fortunate enough to grow up in a pretty functional family? We're really left to our own devices to try to figure all of this out. But it's never too late. I mean, if we are serious about exercising, if we're serious about learning about money, if we're serious about learning about how to improve our health, we can become really serious students of relationships as well. And you know, every week when I look at the domestic violence statistics, I mean, we have 4 women who are killed every single day by their partner. Now, I'm not blaming anybody. This is really an unfortunate state of affairs. But we need to come to the realization that if we are going to change, if we're going to change the trajectory of our health, of our physical health, of our mental health, of our financial health, of our sexual health, and of our relationship health, there are absolutely things that we need to be prepared to do. So I'm really hoping that you are all going to really get on board. And, you know, when I was looking at the depression statistics as an example in the United States, and naturally these statistics have gone up during the past year during COVID, but we have 17.3 million adults in the United States who are suffering from clinical depression, and that translates into 7.1% of all adults, and that number for women happens to be 8.7%. And if we're looking at anxiety disorders of various different kinds, including panic attacks, we're looking at 40 million people. And I probably can easily say that these numbers are less than the reality of what is really, really going on. But, you know, the good news, and this is exactly why I love to do the Ask BD show. I've hosted a number of Ask BD call-in counseling shows on various different networks. And I know that many of you have seen me on local and national television. And the one message, there's really one message that I really like to communicate to you, is that we don't need to navigate all of life's challenges on our own. And that the very, very best thing that we can do if we are struggling physically or emotionally or financially or sexually, if we're just not able to really find, and we don't know why relationships at work, the best thing, the very, very best thing that we can do is actually reach out and ask for help. And that does not mean that you're going to have to be in therapy for 1,000 years. It's just so important to give yourself permission to get a second opinion. And with that second opinion, you know, so many people, they'll have that aha moment, and then we'll be able to start on a new trajectory and on a new path as well. So again, I really hope for those of you who listen, and I know that there are thousands of people who listen to the show every week and who go to the archives, I'm hoping that I am able to convince you every single week that even though your life may not have gone in the direction that you hoped, and even though today that you might be struggling, that life can really, really change if you are willing to really dig in and get to the root of the problems and reach out and get some really good help for yourself. And again, on a daily basis, there are so many things that we actually can do to improve the quality of our lives physically and emotionally. And, you know, one of the terms that Dr. Gary Null has used in the past that I really love, and he talks about intentional ignorance and intentional neglect. And we do not have to choose to be either intentionally ignorant or intentionally neglectful. So how does this really translate into doing what is in our best interest on a day-to-day basis? Well, our eating, of course. We want to make sure that we are eating well, plant-based diets and fruits and vegetables and grains and fish and nuts. And I often look at statistics around the world, and you know that people in Sardinia, they happen to live the longest. So what is it that they are doing? Well, they eat healthily, they interact and socialize, which is so critical for all of us. They sleep 8 hours a night, they take naps. People also need to remember to exercise. It is so important, and the studies are so clear. Not only is exercise good for our bodies, but certainly for our mental health as well. It could probably be, for many, many people, one of the finest antidepressants and anti-anxiety routines around. So exercise, weight training, yoga, meditation, massage, you know, give yourself an opportunity to just slow down and take a bubble bath if that is your thing. And of course, the importance of really having supportive people in your life. And, you know, when we talk about toxins, a lot of people, they talk about chemicals in our food. We want to make sure that we are having very, very clean diets. But of course, when I talk about toxins, I typically talk about toxic people and the importance of extricating ourselves from toxic relationships. And that may mean giving up friends and giving up family, because we do not want to be living in a life where we allow toxic people to take over our psyches and our emotional and our physical well-being. You know, other things that we can do is positive visualization, dancing, listening to music. If you're feeling really down, it can be just wonderful to be able to turn on some upbeat music. A lot of people enjoy herbal teas. I'm not one of these people. My husband, Jim, has about 25 different herbal teas in our kitchen, and that's kind of his thing. Aromatherapy, essential oils. But something else more concrete that I have found that has really helped me over the years is helping others and giving back. And I sometimes think that, you know, we get more from the giving than the people who we are actually helping. It's a wonderful feeling to be able to make a difference in people's lives. And of course, journaling can be something that is very helpful. It really helps you track your mood and your behaviors and where you are and where you've been. And of course, more importantly, where you would like to go. And, you know, one of the things that I think we've all been really caught up in this for the last year is the social media. And I'm saying the same thing as I said before COVID, is that I think we should try to minimize the social media and the cell phones and the computers and really try to find a balance between work and fun. I mean, I will get emails. I'll wake up in the morning and there will be emails from patients or colleagues. People are up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I would suggest that it would be much, much better to go to sleep or make love rather than sending that email that can certainly wait for the next day. So again, my friends, I hope I have convinced you of the importance of doing what is in your best interest every single day. Well, before I introduce a really, really terrific guest, Stacy Francis, who is the president and CEO of Francis Financial, there is some wonderful upbeat music that I asked my producer to play before our interview was going to begin. So the music is For the Love of Money, the OJs. You know, the thing is that where do we learn, again, about relationships, about sex, about mental health and money? And certainly not in schools, unless you're fortunate enough to be able to take a specific course in one of these important arenas of life. You know, we're typically left to our own devices to figure these things out. And the reality is that we are oftentimes not doing such a good job. You know, Susie Orman, we know Susie Orman, she asked the question, and it's an important question. Why is it that women who are so competent as we are in all areas of our lives have not been able to find the same competence when it comes to matters of money? And did you know, and I was checking these statistics yesterday before the show, did you know that only 37 of the CEOs on the Fortune 500 list are women? And that happens to be a record high, and that there are zero Black or Latino women on the list and zero non-binary people. And that really does need to change. So my guest today again is Stacy Francis, who is the president and CEO of Francis Financial, which is an award-winning boutique wealth management and financial planning firm dedicated to empowering women. And Stacy, I am so excited and I'm so pleased that you are on the show with me today. How are you?
I'm doing great, Didi. Great to be here. And I love talking about money and I love that song. Talk about a great way to kick it off.
Yeah, I was looking for something that could really be a little bit upbeat, because a lot of people think about money and they think, oh, it's a boring subject or it's a complicated subject. So you're a certified financial planner and a certified divorce financial analyst with over 20 years of experience in the financial industry. And of course, you were also the founder, and I really want to talk a lot about Savvy Ladies, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to educating and empowering women to take control of their finances. And recently, and congratulations, I mean, you have won some additional recognition. You're a nationally recognized financial expert, featured on CNBC's Digital Financial Advisor Council, the Forbes Finance Council, Kiplinger, and the Wall Street Journal, and you are the host of Financially Ever After. I love the name of the show, a podcast focusing on women, money, and divorce. And you are also the author, I don't know how you find the time to do all of this, of the white paper Unveiling the Unspoken Truth, the Financial Challenges Women Face During and After Divorce. So we have a lot to talk about, and I'm so curious, Stacy, how did you begin to decide that you wanted to spend your professional life in this field as a financial advisor?
You know, it's really interesting, BD, because I used to be a woman who, I was not a money confident woman, and I had something happen in my life that forced me to really face my demons and get comfortable and get pretty savvy about money. Ever since I was a little girl, one of the most important people in my life was my grandmother, and someone that was so special to me. Smart, kind, she was even a bookkeeper. But she had a secret, and that was a secret that ended up taking her life. My grandfather abused her, and it was obvious growing up. The verbal abuse happened in front of me, and I could see the scars and the bruises from the physical abuse. And I never I never could reconcile that of how anyone could believe that they could treat someone that way, let alone one of the most special people in my life. And I was able to get the courage to ask her why she stayed. And this was my late teens. I had just enrolled in college. And she said something that shattered my vision of who I thought I was going to be. And she said she stayed because she felt financially trapped. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we think about money, and that money can trap us. The lack of money, the lack of understanding about money, the not feeling confident about our abilities to make good decisions about money. And in many marriages where there's physical abuse, there's also financial abuse, of course, emotional abuse. And you wrap all of those together, and it's understandable, very sad and heartbreaking, but understandable why my grandmother felt that way and why she stayed. And I ended up starting Savvy Ladies shortly after she passed away in honor of her, because I never wanted another woman to go through what she went through. And, you know, the positive of this story is that her life has continued to make a difference. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, and we work with thousands and thousands of women each year on a pro bono basis, helping them one-on-one through our helpline, where they get to work with some of the top experienced certified financial planners. We have certified divorce financial analysts, accountants, CPAs, anyone that a woman might need to help answer her questions and get her on the right financial path, we have there as a volunteer. And we also have about 50 different programs, workshops, seminars, anything that has a, you know, touches your money. We definitely have a topic that we've covered about that so that you can attend both live, online, but then also we record all the videos. So have, you know, hundreds of videos now that women can watch.
Mm-hmm. Now, what an absolutely wonderful program. You know, when you were talking about your grandmother, you know, in that era, you know, the women typically stayed home. The men
Yes.
were the breadwinners. They took care of the finances. And yet in your mother's generation, Stacy, did that change? Did your own mother realize, you know, after having grown up in the family that she grew up where, you know, she saw her father abuse her mother, did she then learn to become more financially empowered? So did that next generation, did that change?
Yeah. It did change. And interestingly enough, this was my dad's mom. And he ended up marrying a woman that was lovely, like his mom, but very different in that my mother has always been a career woman. My grandmother was as well, but not to the extent of my mom. And my mom went all the way. She had my brother and I at a very young age, ended up getting her bachelor's, getting her master's, and her PhD while raising us, working not one, but actually two jobs to be able to afford to do that, plus managing a household. And I have to say, I am my mother's daughter. I work very hard. I love my work. That my mom loved her work too. But I also understand, as my mom did, how important it was to be financially secure, to understand the finances. And for me in particular, having my own income gives me a huge amount of security. Even though I adore my husband and we've never been happier, we've been together over 20 some years, it just feels so good to know that I'm married to him because he's the best man on the face of the planet. He's just such an amazing partner, but I'm married to him because of that, not because I have to be. And it feels so good, and it's so good for our relationship. So good.
You know, it's interesting in my private practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton. You know, I'm thinking about the various different women that I treat, various different ages and stages in life. And I have to say that even the women, and I'm thinking about a 24-year-old patient of mine who's in finance and another one who has just graduated from Wharton, that in their own financial lives, they have not done what has been in their own best interest, even though they have that financial background. I mean, the women that come to you are all ages and stages in life, right?
Exactly.
And you know, have they learned the lessons, for example, of your grandmother? Are you finding that the women, that we are, in fact, more savvy and that we have taken some real responsibility over our own, not only our own emotional lives and relationship lives, hopefully, but also our financial lives? Or are you finding, on the other hand, that the majority of women have actually dropped the ball, there's been a crisis, and then they end up at Francis Financial?
So, unfortunately, I don't have good news.
Okay, let's hear the real news. This is a show about the real news.
You know, BD, this is very upsetting for me, but when we look at women's engagement with their finances, what studies have shown is that of all the generations, the generation that is least engaged in taking control and being part of their finances, it turns out to be millennials. And it's shocking. And also, just to be clear, it is not millennial women that are single. It's millennial women that have taken on a partner or are married. And you know, there's actually a bumper sticker that I love called "A Man Is Not a Financial Plan." And unfortunately, this generation, we're repeating a lot of the mistakes that we've made in the past. And it's really setting us up for financial difficulties. You know, when we look at women out till age, you know, when they reach age 65 and beyond, the statistics are pretty scary. Women are 80% more likely to be impoverished in retirement. Mm-hmm. 2 out of 5 live at or below the poverty line above age 65. That number is even worse if they're divorced and single. And on average, Edie, women start retirement with 2/3 the amount of money that men do, but we live significantly longer.
Right.
And our expenses in retirement are higher. And it's not because we're footloose and fancy free and buying handbags. It's because our medical expenses are typically a lot longer. And so you have all of these headwinds coming against us. And, you know, one of the things that we're really grappling with in the, you know, financial advisory community is why is this happening? Number one, with women not being engaged with their finances, and what can we do about it? And so that's what, to be honest, keeps me up at night. Because if a woman is part of the financial picture when she's married, she is much more likely to have a financially secure and safe life afterwards. Mm-hmm. And that's really the piece, because when we're on our own, we have to deal with our finances. We have to make the spending decisions, the investing decisions. And for the majority of us, we're going to be responsible, 100% responsible for making those investing and financial planning and spending decisions at some point in our life. In fact, 8 out of 10 of us are going to be in that position where at some point in our life, it's going to be 100% up to us. And so this is not a nice to know. Didi, this is a must know. It's kind of like, you know, understanding, you know, how to eat healthy and exercise and take care of ourselves. We know that's important for a long, healthy life.
Right.
Well, financial fitness, it's right up there too for a long, healthy, secure life.
I'm very curious, Stacey, when you've asked the women, and of course, it's not about blaming anybody, you know, why they basically abandoned being involved and invested in their financial well-being. What are some of the reasons that these women have given you?
You know, there are a lot of reasons. And for a lot of many individuals, it's part of the DNA that they developed when they were raised. So for many women, money wasn't really spoken about growing up. You know, we see sequences that are twice as large as little girls. Parents are much more likely to have a money conversation or talk about investing with little boys than girls. You know, and so it breeds a, it can breed a kind of money being a taboo subject and talking about money not being feminine. And it doesn't help us. It doesn't help us, even though those, you know, attitudes and those beliefs really should be far in, you know, many generations before us, we're still seeing the impact of that. And so what that does is that because there's not really that education or less experience dealing with money, understandably, a lot of women are not as confident as our male counterparts. And if you think about the first time, Beauty, if you can remember back to driver's ed and when you were behind the wheel for the first time, and I remember that, I remember it so clearly because I was so scared that my heart was beating nearly out of my chest and how frightening that was because it was so new and something that I had never really done before. Well, now I drive, I jump behind the wheel and I don't think about it. It's very natural, it's very easy, and it's the last thing I would ever really worry about. And if you really take that analogy and place it onto women and money, unless we really have a lot of experience and education, of course, it's intimidating to deal with money. It's like driving a car for the first time.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Stacey, when I think about, you know, the subject of money, I mean, there's so many issues and there's so many topics and subjects that people who are together, married people, don't talk about. They don't talk about their relationships. They don't talk about sex. We're still very, very, although I think it's changing, we're still very uneasy talking about, you know, mental health issues. And I think that, you know, what you're doing and shows like mine, I'm constantly trying to get people to give themselves permission to do what is in their best interest. And in fact, after every therapy session that I have, regardless of what the problem is, I want people to be really aware as they navigate their days, whether we're talking about money, whether we're talking about, you know, their relationships, whether we're talking about mental health issues, to ask themselves the question, is whatever it is I'm doing, is it in fact in my best interest? Is it good for me? And, you know, money clearly has to be one of the topics and one of the issues that people are constantly asking themselves about, am I being good to myself? Am I being financially savvy? If I am married, is this a subject that I really need to bring up with my partner or my husband so that I'm not going to feel that I'm being left in the dark? Because I think that money, you're right, it's still, it's a dicey subject for, you know, for so many people to still be able to freely talk about. And from what you're saying, they don't. They really don't, and they get themselves into a lot of financial difficulty.
Yeah. Yeah, BD, it was interesting. So I looked up on the internet the top taboo subjects that you should never talk about. And they had them listed. Number one is politics. Number two is religion. Three, personal finance. And number four, sex. So needless to say, you're not talking a lot with your partner about these things. And, you know, I think the challenge is, too, is that when we think about talking about money, it doesn't mean that you have to go, you know, put your net worth on your forehead or, you know, drop into your conversation, having a cocktail with a girlfriend, how much you make. But what you can do is say, you know, I have a 401k. Do you invest in your 401k? How did you choose the investments that you have? Do you feel comfortable with that? How much do you want to keep in an emergency fund? Do you have 3 months of your spending? You know, what does that look like? So,
such important questions. And I would bet that the vast majority of couples who are even planning to get married would probably, I would say, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong, I would say that over 80% of couples would never discuss those subjects, those very important, specific things that you have just mentioned. They probably never come up in a conversation.
They don't. And I will tell you, it's one of the reasons that couples break up. Surveys find that women and men, or you know, any type of partners, if they're not talking about money in their relationship, they are setting themselves up for disaster. And so if you love your spouse and you want your partnership to succeed, then taking time, ideally once a month, to have what I call a money date is really a must. And it doesn't have to be, a financial enema. You know, my husband and I do this. We get a bottle of red wine. We talk about what some expenses are coming in, what income's coming in. We talk about, you know, once we get to be able to travel, do we want to plan a big trip? Okay, if so, what will that look like financially? What kind can we afford? You know, we talk also about our investments, and we'll touch base once a month to say, how are our investments growing? Does that look good? Are we happy with that? Do we feel comfortable with that? Do we have enough cash in our savings account for, you know, a big oopsie that might happen, God forbid, in our financial life? And what's nice about it, we don't always agree. And no one's asking the two of you to always agree, because that's not going to happen. But what is that you're going to be on the same page about what's important to each of you. And that way you can find a solution that's going to work for each of you and also work for your partnership.
Let me ask you this. For people who are really struggling financially, I mean, they probably don't come to Francis Financial, but people who are struggling and who really want to try to get on track, and maybe men, women, couples, you know, who are working at a minimum wage, what do you suggest? Because, you know, we read stories all the time, you know, that people started with nothing and that they were able to then amass a fortune, or they were able to, you know, save enough money to buy their first house. Where do you have people begin who are not in a good place financially, but who really want to get there?
So I have to say, what's wonderful about getting savvy about money is that, Didi, it's really not rocket science. You may go on CNBC or some of the other websites out there and news publications, And it can seem quite complicated, but there are some really simple fundamentals, and it really can be fun to learn about. You know, I always offer up Savvy Ladies as a free, wonderful resource. Savvy Ladies, there's no income test, so whether you have $1 million or you're, you know, $100,000 in debt, you can use those services and also our helpline free of charge. And we do that on purpose because we don't want to hold back any woman from getting the support and her questions answered. Mm-hmm. And so there's no bar from you doing that. And there are some great books out there. David Bach wrote one of my favorite books. It's an oldie but goodie called Smart Women Finish Rich. Just a really wonderful, easy to read. David Ramsey has a great website too, as well. You know, so there's so many resources. Sharon Epperson, who's a dear friend of mine, she's a wonderful correspondent at CNBC, and she wrote a wonderful book for couples and money to help you navigate the money conversations that strong partnerships need. So there are some great resources out there. And if you're a woman thinking about or going through or after the divorce process, and you're not as much a book reader and like to listen to things, we have a great podcast, BD, as you mentioned when you introduced me, called Financially Ever After. And we have dozens and dozens of great podcasts on every financial topic you can imagine to help you make smart decisions. And what I would say, I mean, I'm constantly learning about money. I've been doing this for, you know, several decades, and I'm never going to know it all, nor are you going to know it all. And so it's like going to the gym. It's like eating healthy. You can't do it for 1 week and then be done for the rest of your life. Right. It you know, it needs to be something that you do ongoing. And I will tell you a word to the wise. So I listen to my money podcasts and, you know, my thought leaders in my life when I'm exercising. And I feel really good because I'm getting financially fit as well as, you know, physically fit too.
Mm-hmm. No, I think what's so important, you know, with what you're saying, I mean, there are many things that are important, but is that there are multiple resources out there. I mean, I hadn't heard, I have to admit, I had not known about Savvy Ladies until a week ago when you and I started to talk. And it's like, how can this be? Because I know a number of women that we know in common. And when I went to the Savvy Ladies website, it was like, wow, I mean, look at all the help that people are able to get for free. And yeah, I think that, you know, getting the word out to women about financial resources so that they're not going to feel so alone and so scared and so overwhelmed. I mean, that's really the good news. And I'm hoping that people who are listening to the show right now, whether they're women or men, I mean, we all have so much to learn when it comes to becoming financially responsible and financially savvy.
You know, BD, I am so glad you bring that up because it's not your fault that you haven't heard about Savvy Ladies. There's nothing wrong with you. It's something that we need help with. So Savvy Ladies, we are a nonprofit organization, and we don't necessarily have a marketing budget because every dollar we have goes directly into helping and servicing women. So that is my ask today. And my ask is, if you know of a woman or you that needs to get more savvy about their money, please use those resources. And through Francis Financial, we're a little different. That's my independent, fee-only financial advisory firm. We tend to work with women who are going through divorce who have significant assets that, however, are concerned about taxes. They're concerned about, you know, how do I afford to live my life after the divorce, especially if they haven't been working for a while, and need a firm to help them manage their money and buy those stocks and those bonds that are going to get them out to age 95 and beyond. So they're two separate organizations with different missions, but hopefully a fit for whoever, wherever they are to give them the support they really need.
And do you find that the women that you are working with who are going through divorce, that it is actually a wake-up call in a way, and maybe an important wake-up call, that they meet with you and your team, and once and for all are going to be, at this point, forced into a position where they're really going to have to take responsibility and learn about money?
You know, exactly. We do see that. And we find that a lot of the individuals have not dealt with money before in their marriage. They may have been very active with the day-to-day budgeting and bill paying, but not as active and really engaged in the investment management or the long-term financial planning. So it's a wonderful opportunity for them to start to learn that piece. And, you know, we as women are just as good as money with money as our male counterparts. In fact, there's a few studies, Fidelity has one of them, and BD, they found that women investors actually have a slightly higher investment return than our male counterparts. And we dug into that because we wanted to know, where is this coming from? And it's not that we choose one best investment over the other that's better. It turns out that we as women, we tend to make decisions about our portfolio. We really research. And then once we put that portfolio in place, we tend to stay with that allocation, that mixture between stocks and bonds in good times, and also more importantly, in bad times. So we tend to not make as many investing mistakes of buying when the market's really high and selling when, God forbid, the market goes down. And that small piece actually can add an investment return anywhere from 0.5% to 1% higher each year for women, which is wonderful. It helps us make up for the fact that we're starting retirement with less money, and that money has to work a little harder for us in retirement to live out to age 95 and beyond.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a big and final question for you. You know, I've written many, many articles, hundreds of articles over the years. And one of my most favorite articles and important articles for people that in my area is your therapist helpful or harmful? So I'm going to ask you the same question. How does one go about assessing a potential financial advisor? I mean, I've heard horror stories, Stacey, where people, you know, have met with financial advisors and everything sounds just so amazing, maybe too amazing. And the consequences of that relationship have been a disaster. So what kinds of questions should people be asking a potential advisor?
It's a really good question, and I want everyone to write this down. And when you're interviewing an advisor, you're looking for a perfectly balanced three-legged stool. We know if there's two legs, what happens to the stool? It falls over. And so you want a three-legged stool. And what those three legs are, you want an advisor that is fee-only, that is a fiduciary, and that is independent. So you're going to ask, are you fee only? Are you a fiduciary? And are you dependent? Independent. And what does that mean? So fee only means that they're not going to get commissions by selling you things like life insurance or annuity or putting you in one investment that pays them 5% because you buy it. And so then they sell it and put you in a new one and you have to pay another 5% of the money that you put in. That's really important. So fee only, and then fiduciary. Fiduciary means that by law, your financial advisor has to do what's best for you. It's like that best friend that you have that you know would always make the right decision for you if, God forbid, you couldn't make that decision for yourself. Fiduciary does just that and, again, legally protects you. And the third is independent. A person who isn't beholden to just sell you products from, let's say, Merrill Lynch or Fidelity or whatever it happens to be, that they have the world's investment to choose from so that you have the best, most robust portfolio as possible. And there's a great website that you can go to find fee-only, fiduciary, and independent financial advisors out there. And it's called NAFSA, and it's a mouthful, so I'm going to spell it. N as in Nancy, A as in Apple, P as in Paul, F as in Frank, A as in Apple.org. And you can go there to find a financial advisor that fits you. We would be happy to talk to you as well. Hopefully we're a fit at Francis Financial, but if not, we can help you again navigate based on what you need, who that financial advisor is that's best for you. And just remember, you'd never go on a first date and then decide to get married on the second date. And that's what I would also recommend for you too. Make sure that you get to know that financial advisor, know that team. Ideally, have it be a referral from someone who works with them or knows them very well. Because while it's not a marriage, of course, it's not. Like you said, Beattie, you don't want to make a mistake. You want to choose the right fit for you. And ultimately, your gut is a really good test of that too.
Mm-hmm. So there's actually, I mean, there's a lot of homework. It's the same thing when you're finding a partner. I mean, you really do have to make sure that you're in a good place. And, you know, the assessment tool that I've actually developed to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you. So people who are really looking for a financial advisor, I mean, we have homework that we have to be prepared to do so that we are in a position to ask the right questions. You know, I think about a patient of mine right now who is fairly financially savvy. And she was working with a financial advisor who made some recommendations that seemed reasonable to her at the time. And then she felt, you know, upon thinking about the recommendations, that this was not really the thing to do, and ended up finding out that he had invested in a variety of different investments that she had not approved. And this just happened about a month ago. And the company actually gave her back all of her money. Now, here was somebody who was pretty sophisticated, mm-hmm. and yet found herself in a very messy kind of a situation with a very, very highly respected financial advisor and firm. So, as you say, I think that referrals, you know, referring and referrals to people who we know and trust, I mean, that's going to make our lives, whether we're talking about psychotherapy or we're talking about a financial advisor, a lot simpler if we are referred to someone by somebody that we know and trust.
Yes. And being referred is a big piece of it. And also knowing what questions to ask. And we have a wonderful questions to ask a financial advisor that anyone, if you want to email me, it's Stacy, S-T-A-C-Y, at francisfinancial.com. I'm happy to send you, because I think one of the challenges is you kind of don't even know like what questions to ask. So that woman that just shared that horror story, one of the questions that we put in there is, will you check with me before you make an investment? And many of our clients want to have us double check with them before we make an investment. And some of them work at companies where they have to get it approved through their compliance. So, you know, again, the more you're able to ask, the more comfortable you're going to feel with the right fit, the right advisor. But I think
there's a real learning curve here, though.
There is.
It's complicated.
It can be complicated. And again, most people wouldn't know what to ask. They wouldn't know a good advisor from a bad advisor. And that is something that slowly over time, I think that individuals, the public is getting more savvy about and learning what to ask for, learning what's important. Again, as I mentioned, fee only, fiduciary, independent, to really put them in a better place to make good informed decisions. Because otherwise, it's feeling like you're going on a first date and having to make a decision whether or not you're going to marry that person.
Exactly. You know, well, I know right? that my audience knows that I never, ever have guests on my show who are there to just promote their business, that everybody that I have are people I know, people who I vetted, people who I trust, people who I would go to, you know, for my own particular needs, whatever those needs might be. And so that I want people who are listening right now that to know that Stacey Francis is the real deal. This is not an infomercial. This is not a commercial. And that if you are interested in working with somebody who has great expertise and integrity, then you really do need to give Stacey Francis and Francis Financial a call. So the best way, of course, to reach you is still by phone or to go to your website.
Yeah, so you can visit our website, www.francisfinancial.com, or you can email me, Stacey, S-T-A-C-Y, at francisfinancial.com. And I can point you in whatever direction you need, whether that's pointed to Savvy Ladies for the services we provide, or if you need someone for ongoing wealth management, happy to point you in that direction, or just even, you know, referrals. And Beattie, you mentioned this, you know, referrals to maybe it's a trust and estate attorney, maybe it's to a matrimonial attorney, maybe it's to a life insurance person that is trustworthy. You know, we can help with that because we've spent the last two decades, to be honest, kissing a lot of frogs so that other people don't have to. And, you know, the good news is there's not too many frogs out there, but you don't want to accidentally have one of them, you know, turn out to put you financially behind or not be able to give you the support you really need. So if anyone needs any of those resources, I'm happy to help so that they're not kissing any frogs.
Well, and I certainly endorse everything that you're saying. And Stacey, I want to thank you so, so much for coming on the show. I think this has been really helpful, really informative. And even though I haven't seen you in years since I first arrived in New York City at our breakfast meetings, I'm really looking forward to seeing you in person very soon. And again, thank you so much. And we'll talk real soon, okay? Take care.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Stacey Francis, and she really is the real deal. She is the president and CEO of Francis Financial, which is an award-winning wealth management firm. And it's really true. I'm very, very careful about referrals. I want people to feel safe. I want people to know that if I am recommending or referring you, whether it's to a psychiatrist or to a financial advisor, that it's somebody who I have vetted very, very, very carefully. So I am hoping that this has been an informative show for you. And I can't believe how quickly this hour has actually come and gone. And, you know, I leave you every week with two very, very important messages. And the first message is to do whatever you possibly can do, whether it's financially or nutritionally or emotionally, psychologically or psychiatrically, to do what is in your best interest. And of course, that means really taking the time to embrace yourself and love yourself. And of course, the second message is that we all need to continue to do a much, much, much better job in learning to love each other. So goodbye, everybody. Have a good rest of the day. The weather is warming up, so we're going to get outside and exercising more and moving around. And I will talk with you next week, next Monday, every Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. on the Ask Beattie Show right here on the Progressive Radio Network. Bye-bye, everybody.